Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Now, I need you all for a project. James Jeffries, a friend of Robert's, is sponsoring Dumpty Dum. He is very nearly as clever as Robert and, actually, slightly more creative. He builds prototypes for the web and does some amazing things with data for arts and culture. In fact, I may ask him to work on the Village website if I can loosen Jennifer's grip on the thing. He's worked with all the best people, you know. The BBC Research and Development team, creating interactive story explorers for Homefront and Peaky Blinders, for the London Philharmonic Orchestra, creating a prototype of a searchable archive of their historic performances. Once, he even built some tweeting receipt printers for a Bill Drummond exhibition. Now, that's the kind of innovation we need for the Village show. So if you'd like to talk to him about your project idea, you could get in touch with him at Robert, what's his email address? James@shedcode.co.uk. That's James@shedcode.co.uk. Or you could have a browse of his website, shedcode.co.uk. Do tell him I was looking for him if you see him, won't you? I want him to design me a digital resurgam stone.
Hi, Dumpty Dum, it's Nocilla here. Having been to a recent show of I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, where we played the Archer's theme tune on a kazoo, I thought I might send this in for you to hold in the bank. Don't use it if you don't need to. Take care.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that has centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I am the horribin' cheekbones, that is Royfield Brown, and with me I have the reduced to clear Merlot, that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of our cringy seduction attempt, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum comes from Nozilla and a magic kazoo. Well done, you. Now, Juicy Loose.
Yeah.
If someone would like to send us in Dumpty Dum, do they have to do it on a kazoo?
They don't. No, you can do it on the instrument of your choice, or if you'd like to just leave us a plot prediction, or tighten your tabard so you look like two Exocet missiles in a nylon aircraft hangar. Ring us on 0203 0313 105, or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thank you to Cosmo for his podcast.
What are we thanking Cosmo for? I didn't get a podcast round this week.
No thanks, Cosmo. No, sod off, Cosmo. Thanks to Shedcode for sponsoring us, and to Derek for the back bedroom. Derek is recovering from his torn scrotum operation. They couldn't find anything suitable to do a graft with at first, so they ended up using a bit of dried Satsuma skin. It has worked, but when he gets het up, there's a whiff of thick-cut marmalade.
That's quite good. Well done. Well done. I tell you, if my scrotum was torn, a bit of prune. No, you wouldn't even see the joins.
Purple grape skin dried out. That would do.
on this week's Archer's Phil Dumdydum episode, we have calls from Barrett Green, who disapproves of blackmail. Ish. Vicky Cole. Oh, I love my Vicky. Hello, love. Who thinks Lillian's in danger. Claire Asprey, who says it's all got sorted just a little bit too quick. And she's back. The goddess. Who's all loved up. But first, before all that, it's Juicy Lucy Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
The big happy news of the week is that Rob has been binned. I was very ready to join in the general celebrations, but I didn't feel I could do so wholeheartedly, partly because, well, once again, I seem to have missed a meeting. Did I nod off and miss the bit where Lillian told Justin the whole story? Or Stefan did? How did Justin know everything in such detail? Where was the shock horror reaction from Justin? But I mean, it wasn't that important, really, was it? Not the final denouement to a 2-year storyline that would result in the most hated man in Ambridge and a perceived threat of actual physical violence being removed from the village. I mean, why would we want to hear that? Not when we could spend an entire sodding episode at Freddie and Lily's party. I am on the verge of hysteria. It is the same reasoning as us not being allowed to hear Ian's groundbreaking visit to Helen in prison, but apparently we were all gagging to hear Jenny Darling try out paint samples on the radio. Well, as it was apparently so important, we better deal with this party. Lily is just unbelievable. They seem to have based her on Cher in Clueless. What kind of a freak has nibbles at a teenager's party? Surely a teenage party involves one person dancing by himself, a group of boys dismantling the stereo, someone drunk talking to the hamster, one person crying, and one person holding another person's hair back while they throw up in the downstairs bathroom. Everybody at this party had names that sounded like a range of furniture from Sofa World. Things like Hamilton and Amber. There was probably a futon somewhere, but I wasn't sure. One of the people was called Porston. Or Corsten. I think one of the writers just sat on their keyboard until some names came up. Shelley is allergic to crab, apparently, so make a note of that, as it might turn out to be relevant in 6 months' time, because it sure as hell wasn't relevant now. One of them had long legs, a long face, and a velvet choker, and went, nay, presumably. This is another bit of personality transplant. Lest we forget, about a year and a half ago, Freddie was stomping about roaring at his mother for a little scrumpy-induced rumpy with Uncle Roy and treating her like a rampant Mata Hari. Now they're both patronising her into the ground and talking about her as if she's a dozy nanny. I've got a lot more chance with Amber if I don't have to say much, said Johnny. I'm more of a point and grunt man. Isn't pointing brilliant? Freddie took his trousers off and Johnny said, there's not much of a moon, which seemed a little overly critical. Susan has got a new lipstick, Spring Shimmer. It came in a palette with rampant snobbery, real custard, and an overly persistent shade called Tracy's Tongue. You try and rub it off, but it won't go, and if you ignore it, you find it all over your trousers. Helen's deafness is back. It comes and goes, really. When it's about her, her hearing's really acute, but when people say, I don't want to talk about it, she just can't hear it. When someone says to you, Helen, I don't want to talk about it, the answer is, okay. Your answer should not start with the words, but I just want to say. Anyway, true to form, Krusty said to Helen, I do not want you to come for a walk with me. So they went for a walk. Krusty said, I don't want to talk about this. So they had a chat about it. And then Krusty decided to share her big secret, the fact that she'd made up a father for her child with Helen, because she's so good at keeping secrets. Things were all a bit stilted over at Adam and Ian's. Oh, sorry, do you want the bathroom first? No, no, after you. I'm planning on having a massive poo, so I'd advise you to get in there quick. Then, after a pissed-up evening drinking Cosmopolitans at the party, Ian let Adam back into the bedroom, which was a relief, as all his clean pants were in there. It was not fate throwing you and Roy together at New Year, Tracy. It was you throwing your mouth at Roy, just so that is clear. Bert went up to Home Farm to watch Adam spreading his fertilizer for inspiration. He gave him some wise words about marriage and pointed out that you needed to keep talking. Poor Frieda. I bet she'd have given a kidney for a bit more silence from Bert. Every row a bloody poem. In a commendable show of realism, Krusty told Tom to promise her that he would never ever ask her to marry him again. When is leap year? But back to the best bit of the week, Rob getting fired. My favourite bit was when Justin made him do all the work first. A 2-hour meeting on a Friday afternoon. Let's go all through the spreadsheets in the whole world. Oh, and by the way, did I mention that you are more fired than a rifle range? Rob said with his customary maturity, well, I wouldn't want to work here anyway. And Justin was like, well, actually, like, no one likes you. And I'm going to tell everyone else not to like you. And Rob was like, well, actually, we don't know what Rob was like. But he won't just disappear. Not Voldemort. He'll be back, married to Hazel Woolley, or at the helm of a bulldozer, having bought St. Stephen's with the aim of turning it into a Costa. I'd like to say bye-bye, Robart, but I don't think you've gone. You're a bit like Sherlock. I keep thinking this must be it, but then there you are again. So I won't say bye-bye. I'll say au revoir. And also, ha-ha-ha. The end.
Yay. I enjoyed that this week. Well done, you.
So what did you think? Did you get that then? Because me and Derek had to have an emergency meeting in the forest about, did I miss a bit? Where we were saying, well, how did she know? And then he listened back again and I listened back again. And we presume she told Justin after her conversation with Jenny, when Jenny told her all about the blocking up the culvert with bits of stuff. But wouldn't it have been nice to hear that?
This is a recurring problem in this show. Yes. The vital bits of the drama are just, for whatever reason, cut. And there is no explanation for it, which makes any kind of rational sense as far as I'm concerned. I get there is a point that every now and then you need startling reveals. But this is pretty integral, really, because it wouldn't only just lead you to join up some of the plot points, it would also give you a massive insight into the relationship between Lillian and Justin.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I honestly thought I have missed an episode, and I went back and listened all over again. I was thinking, no, 19th, 20th, 21st, 21st. No, it's not there.
Well, I feel similarly that way, considering that Rob has just disappeared and there's what happened on Sunday. But I know I am jumping ahead of myself. But as I said, these jumps, as you've pointed out, happen frequently, and you know, instead we get the colour of someone's lipstick for comedy relief in terms of
this.
I don't know.
Not just that, I could now pick out Lily's friends in a sodding police lineup because we don't know which bloody foods they're allergic to. We're never gonna hear from them again, ever. Why did they spend 8 minutes or whatever it was messing around there? Yeah, and I know they're trying to establish Lily, but we get it. Let's go back to the people we care about, shall we? Ugh.
I hear you. Luce. I'm somewhat befuddled by last week, right? Because I'm trying to really work out what is going on with the character of Rob. Not what has happened, but have we been led a whole load of red herrings in terms of where the character is going to go, whether these pronouncements on Sean O'Connor gave in terms of Rob being around for 20 years. Is that the ramifications of Rob Titchener going to be around for 20 years? So, hell, I can say the character is going to be around for 20 years. Or, you know, are we now truly leading up to the whole kind of denouement in that he's just going to go postal? Because, as I said a couple of weeks ago, the only thing he had going for him in terms of keeping him together as an adult was this job. It still gave him immense status. Now that has gone. You know, where is there for him to go? And all my talk of normalising Rob, that kind of goes out the window now. So I don't know really what to make of the last week. So I'm just ready just to go to the caller in us, because you know what, Lucy?
Mm-hmm.
Punditry is a mug's game. You know, I think from here on in, we just say, hello, this is Dumpty Dum. You can do a
this
monologue.
Is what happened. We don't know why. There we go.
That's yeah, exactly. And we just go caller in us, and then we just wrap the whole thing up. Because I appreciate there are dramatic conventions of how you write things and you plot character arcs. But there is a massive level of misinformation, misdirection, sorry, which actually goes on here. And then it's just like reading the tea leaves, isn't it? It's about as predictable as that. So I, for one, I'm just going to keep stum from here on in, which I know there's a whole load of listeners saying, thank God for that. It's only taken you 3 years, Mr. Brown. Right.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
So I'm just going to say, caller in as Lucy. Who's first?
I think we should play Barrett Green and Vicky Cole. Oh, actually, we could do all of them all together because they've all said a lot of the same thing. Barrett Green and Claire Asprey, we shall have together.
Aye.
Hi Dumpty Dum, it's Claire from Clapham here, and I'm going to be really quick this week. So I know we're all celebrating that Stefan has returned and he's blackmailing Rob, and Rob's backed into a corner, and now obviously he's had the sack from work. But there's just a part of me thinks, in a week, goodness me, we had to listen for years as Rob made Helen's life a misery, and I was rather hoping that Stefan would drag that out and Rob would be in a real state and it would take months. So on the whole, yay that Rob's had his comeuppance to an extent, but boo that it all happened so quickly, because I was hoping to hear his pain for way longer than that. Okay, keep up the good work.
Hello, Barrett Green here. Obviously, I cannot under any circumstances condone blackmail.
Barrett Green, I think you're having some sort of breakdown, but it was very amusing to listen to, so well done you. And Claire, yes, I don't think we can say it's been sorted. You know, yes, it has been sorted quickly, if it has been sorted. But Justin, we can't talk about Sunday, can we? Rats. There's an insinuation that he has gone. But no proof, really. I want to hear him being driven from the village by people with horse whips throwing turnips at his head. I don't want him to just go. It's the same when Hazel Woolley just drives off and you think, are you coming back? What's happened? Is that it? Have you got, you know, you've just pulled your cloak around you and vanished? Or are you about to do a U-turn on the bypass and come roaring back with a machine gun? I don't, you know, it's sort of, there's no sense of finality unless we hear from him again. But then, as Sean O'Connor said, he's going to be around for the next 20 years. I presume that is because he's going to be involved with poor old Jack for the next, 16 years, 18 years. So possibly that's it. But yes, it has all been sorted a bit quickly, considering what they put us through for 2 years. You know, it's all done and dusted in a week. But, you know, there was something very satisfying about it, but I'd rather it had been, if it was slightly more
Luce,
definitive.
I disagree. I don't think it has been satisfying, considering that.
No, but I just loved hearing him being told to sling his hook. I like that.
To clear his desk, right?
Yeah. That I think was satisfying. But if we don't hear anything from him now, it won't be any more satisfying, will it?
It'll just be a bit. An utter impossibility that they could build this storyline up to the extent that they have and then just let it, you know, peter out with such a pathetic whimper that clear your desk, Rob. Okay, you know, I'm off. I didn't want your job anyway. You know, there's no way on God's earth that they could end it in such a way. So
let's go to Vicky Cole now, because then we could talk, because she says something in the similar vein, and then we can talk about that.
Okay.
Hi, Lucy, Royfield and everyone. It's Vicky Cole here. I haven't called in for ages, but I have been following the Archers, and I've certainly been listening to all the Dumpty Dums and enjoying them very much, so thank you. What a week. I really enjoyed the ding-dong between Tracy and Kirsty. I think there's a lot of comic potential there, especially if Susan gets involved. So I think that's going to be really funny. Poor Kirsty, though. Pies. Oh, dear. But mainly, how clever this week was. And we didn't know whether Lillian had heard anything. I've now got an image of her with her ear to the keyhole, listening to everything, and that's why Stefan barged into her when he went out of the door quickly. And we didn't know until the last minute that she had heard, she had told Justin, and Justin had Rob absolutely squirming. It was fantastic. So my only concern is that it might all push him over the edge, and he'll do something awful to either to Stefan, as your listeners said last week, or maybe Lillian, or maybe Helen, because he'll think that she's at the root of everything. And maybe he'll attack someone, then he'll go on the run, taking one or both of the boys. I don't know, all the stuff that we feared would happen at Christmas. I think it's coming up. Rah! Anyway, keep up the good work. Love the podcast. Thanks. Bye.
So, is Lillian now in danger? Because the first thing he did was say, she wasn't content with listening, eavesdropping. She had to lie as well, blah, blah, blah. She's like her niece. She's, you know, nasty and manipulative and everything. But he hasn't taken any revenge on Helen. But that's because she's got Jack, I guess. And he knows that anything he does to Helen will jeopardize his relationship with the boys. Surely he knows that if he does anything to Lillian, he will be in prison and then he won't see the boys as well. So, you know, we don't know quite how unhinged he is, do we?
No. And I suppose that what the writers have now is a complete and utter blank canvas to take this in whatever direction that they wish. Because He's got nothing to, as I said before, he's got nothing to, in effect, yes, he's got Jack to live for, but his dignity has been utterly stripped away. He's got no one to run away with. Whereas, you know, remember before,
yeah,
Jess said, oh, we moved from this place to that place. He's got no one to run to,
yeah.
No one to run to with. He does have feeling for his son. And then also, he does have some level of feeling for Henry. So you got to think he's going to stay around. He can go postal. You know, he can literally burn down the village shop. He can try and kidnap Lillian. He can do a whole manner of things, which I just think would be somewhat poor in terms of serving us up this drama. I actually think that normalising him, so just the stinky, bad smell in the village, was actually the correct thing to do. Just have him as in a cage, just fade him out generally. But he's got nowhere to go. He's got nowhere to go. So there has to be a massive blow up. There has to be. And we know he's got a volcanic temper. And we saw him with Emma before Christmas. So he can lose it in public. He has lost it in public. Surely that was just a little amuse-bouche for what he's going to do.
I think when he... Silly things for me, like when he caught the button girls writing whatever they wrote on his car, he didn't try and rush after them and batter them. He said, someone should call the police, I will... Da-da-da-da-da. And it he does genuinely still have a kind of a belief in the system. The system will prove him right. This time, you know, he was convinced that the court would see it from his point of view and that the court would see it from his point of view in terms of Jack as well, that he would say that Helen was unfit and that he should have, you know, when I get my son back. He was genuinely convinced. This is the first time he thinks he's on the wrong side. This is the first time he knows that he went against authority to do something, and that he, you know, he hasn't been on the side of the estate. He hasn't done what the establishment wanted him to do. And I don't know what that would provoke in someone like him. Is it then that he's some kind of outlaw, that he sees himself as, right, you know, the establishment's let me down, so I'm just going to go rogue now, I'm just going to go off the chart and do what I want, and I'm an outlaw, in which case kidnapping the boys would be the next logical, and I just, when I say logical, obviously don't mean logical, I mean in his head, that would be the next thing to do. But I mean, in terms of, because he can't pay rent, he can't stay in the village, but it just all feels a bit half-hearted, really. It feels a bit quick, as Claire said.
Well, yeah, there is no way that this is the end. And I think we all know that, Claire. So, but it's just how the heck they're going to deal with this, I think, will really either underline or can potentially blow up all the fantastic work they've done with this storyline. Because I know that I say soapy tropey a little bit too often, but, and I've said this before, but there is a general conceit that we are not your average continuous drama listeners, that we expect rich characters and we expect our storylines to be rooted in the minutiae of daily life. So if you have somebody going postal and literally threatening to burn the village down or to explode, it needs to be done in a way which has large dollops of reality and not large dollops of E17. Not E17, of Walford.
Right, was it? Watch it.
Yeah, so is it E20? What's the postcode of Walford? Whatever the postcode of Walford in EastEnders actually is. It can't have, because we will just shrug our we'll shake our heads and shrug our shoulders and actually tear the script writers to pieces. And I know last week that Cosmo said that the script writer had a bit of a dodgy wicket, and I think we, you know, trying to analyse this in terms of the whole direction of it, obviously the Americans would call it the showrunner, but you know, the new person who is in control of the Archers has got to deal with the character Rob Titchener and to put this whole storyline to bed so we can clearly move on. And then the poor script writers need to make flesh out of them their bones, don't they? Mm-hmm. You know, they say, well, okay, the character needs to go in this direction, that direction, go deal with it, Kerry, or go deal with it, whoever. And they're going, bloody hell, fire, okay.
Blah, blah, blah.
You know, and it's hard for these, you know, I just think whoever writes, whatever Rob is going to do next, you know, this man who has nothing really to live for, let's just hope that it's done in a believable way. Because, as I said before, the general conceit is, and we all know it, that we think we're a little bit kind of clever, us people that listen to the Archers. It's true, Luce. You know it.
No, I know. Oh, I know. Gotcha.
So you've got to serve us up something which is very clever.
Are you threatening?
I kind of am. Yeah. You know, serve us up something which is unexpected but believable. And he's not going to be you know, something which you can say is so obviously a trope which is used in numerous dramas.
As a little bonus, if it could involve Toby Fairbrother losing a testicle in a horrible sample accident, that would be aces. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. I'm going to say no more because I know I'm just being made to sound like a right chump with all my predictions in this show. So
you got the pregnancy right.
Well, but as Paul Room said, after fundamentally, the scriptwriters know exactly what they're doing, and they throw us hints and clues as to what's going to happen.
They throw us a bone every now and again, don't they?
But also this massive misdirection. And so he is a doctor. So what is it that Ruth had a few years ago? It was cancer of
the
what?
She had breast cancer.
Yeah, okay. So she had breast cancer, all right? And so, and then sometime after that was cleared up, she developed a cough.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, That was complete nutty. Well, he lost on me.
Had Paul got her in some kind of remission?
Exactly. Paul said, as a doctor, he said, I knew what that meant. I very clearly knew what that meant. She went to the doctor for a cough. She couldn't get rid of her cough. And she said, well, that is because, you know, actually the cancer had come back. That's classic symptoms, he said. But his misdirection. She went to the doctors, took some cough mixture, was fine. And he went, exactly. Took a bit of Benlin, she was fine. Right. And he said, it's misdirection. He said they knew that there were going to be people that, you know, had gone through what she had. Yeah. And also doctors, you know, health professionals who say, hi, blah, blah, blah. So deliberate misdirection is used all the time. So
then when she said about the soft cheese, I noticed that because I really missed eating soft cheese when I was pregnant. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, Jesus, maybe they are right then. But you hadn't noticed the soft cheese, but you'd noticed it ages before because you, when you rang me and said, ha ha, she's pregnant because of the Nuffield thing and da la 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 la. And that was just sort of, I suppose it's how you, it's everybody's instinct, isn't it? It's what you would relate to as what that means, what the clues mean.
Yeah. And, you know, you and I view this thing very, very differently, that I get lost on the minutiae of who's exactly said what to whom. But what I try and keep a handle on is the long-term forecast in terms of where the characters are apparently going. So I would say it's kind of, you know, the drift of that. And it was just nonsensical that you would draft in a new actor who's just spent time away to spend more time away. In this case, we'll wait on a minute. They're setting up tension here. Yeah. What is the tension? Oh, he's had this one night with Kirsty. She's got to be up to stuff. You know.
Oh, talking of that, I reckon Kirsty's baby is going to be a girl because we've got too many boy babies around. We've got Henry and Jack.
And Jack. Mm.
So then because you need to have a bit of teenage shenanigans, don't you? And I know they're cousins, but whatever. You know what I mean? Sort of going around as mates or whatever. You need to have a sort of a gender balance. Yeah. So I think Kirsty's will be a girl.
Mm.
Too many boys. And we've got Kira.
I was going to say, there is Kira. But yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. But anyway, how many calls have we got through?
We've just got Goddess Diva now.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Dumpty Dum, it's Goddess Diva here. I'm back. I've been away. I've been moving house and breaking up with one relationship and getting into a lovely new one that I'm very, very happy in. And wanted to ring in just to say, hello, I have missed you all. And yes, yes, fucking yes. I'm so pleased. At last, did you know this girl is come up? I'm very, very happy about this. Now, let's just see him get prosecuted for the manslaughter of Frieda Fry, shall we? Not that she had much to say for herself, but, you know. And, and the only other things, really, is Jill needs to just shut up now because she's just getting right on my last nerve. And Kirsty, oh, the hurt and fear. But I still think her and Tom will end up getting back together. Anywho, off to go and play some PlayStation, wearing a Pikachu onesie and celebrating the demise of the Titchinog. And hope that you're all well, and I love you loads, and I shall be ringing in more often again. Bye. Ta-ra.
Put his fever out. She is all loved up. It is very nice to hear you again and sounding so jolly and happy. Now, manslaughter of Frieda Fry through the blocking of the culvert. Yes, ideally, we'd like the man banged up. Don't think that's going to happen because Justin and Lillian will now just join forces, won't they, and just deny all knowledge of anything and say, no, he just left, blah, blah, blah.
Mm. It's absolutely not in Damara's interests to pursue Rob legally. Here it isn't. You know, if things then come out that it was their culvert which actually contributed to the village flooding, well, then they need to throw him underneath the bus, so to speak, or throw him underneath the culvert. Yeah. But right here and now, it's within their interests to pay off Stefan, get rid of Rob, pretend like nothing happened.
I was rather hoping that Stefan would stick around. Oh, he's such a... Even when he made Stefan wait and that... He said, yes, I'm not going to pay you anything. And then he said, oh, what about if I go to the papers? All right, then I'll pay you double. You know, he's just all over the shop, flapping around, trying to exercise his little tiddly bit of control, saying, you sit there while I take my phone call. Thank you for making me wait, Rob. Very polite, or whatever it was he said.
Here's a question for you, Luce. If you're Justin Elliott, and Stefan has come to you and he says, I saw Rob block the culvert, which contributed to the flooding of the village. You walk up to Justin Elliott and you say that. What deal, I don't mean in terms of money, you know, in terms of the amount of money, but what deal do you strike with Stefan? Because literally, you have to give him such an obscene... Well, you, whatever amount of money you give him, how do you know he's not going to turn up in 18 months' time and say, I need some more?
I think you give him a good... you go further than giving him a good reference. You actually find him employment with someone else. So that then, if he threatens to turn up later, you can get him sacked. If you've got him into the job, you can get him out again with somebody that you work with.
All right. But let's just think... Now I'm going to talk about potential specific amounts of money. So, Stefan...
10 grand, I'd say.
10 grand. So, if it comes out that an employee of Damara has flooded the village, okay, and is in part liable for some of the extensive damage of that, 10 grand's a drop in the ocean. You know, this is the reason why I'm somewhat of a bloke that just is a somewhat wishy-washy pundit on a drama as opposed to a script writer. Because in my little head, I cannot construct of how you can create that deal so that Stefan doesn't come back. Because the amount of money...
Stefan was in the wrong, though. I mean, Justin could have said to Stefan, why the hell didn't you tell me this at the time? I'm now going to sue you because you are also... You withheld evidence. You are now also in the wrong.
But Stefan could just say, I'm a whistleblower. And I wasn't sure at the time, but, the more I think about it...
No, because he paid off.
Yeah, but so he by accepted Rob. A bribe. By
he
Rob.
Accepted a bribe. No, he accepted a bribe.
I couldn't live with myself, Your Honour. And I thought about this, and I just couldn't live with myself. And I'm sure it was Rob, so that's the reason why I've turned up right here.
It's much too shady. It's much too shady for Stefan to be able to take the moral high ground and come.
Listen, he wouldn't be holding the moral high ground from any real sense of conviction. No. But it's just a case of surely he could just turn up back in 18 months' time and just say to Justin, you know, that 10 grand you gave me, I burnt through that, or that 20 grand.
Yeah.
Because what Damara have to lose is significantly much more. And Stefan could just say, you know what, I could get, you know, even if I am some kind of accomplice, you know what, I'm going to take you down with me. I don't really care.
Yeah, well, that's why blackmail is a very dangerous thing to start, isn't it? Because you never really get free of it. You have to be so sure that you've neutralised the other person. And I think...
So you're saying that's what Justin's done. That's why there's no more Stefan. He's had him taken out by the Russians or something.
I think Justin's powerful enough to be able to properly frighten somebody, more so than Rob, because he has more influence. But I agree, I don't think once you've entered into that kind of arrangement with somebody, I don't think you're ever free, properly free.
Anyway, as I said, that's the reason why I don't write, because I can't really construct that in a way that makes sense to me. I just think you'd have to give him such a large amount of money, but you're right, but with it needs to come some massive threat, doesn't it? I'm going to give you this amount of money, but
if I ever
see you again, right?
Yeah.
Well, you see those legs, you won't have them anymore.
Hmm. that is okay. I can have more of them made in Estonia. That's what he would say. Lillian McCarthy has emailed us. She of the Newcastle meetup. She said, I wanted to give a big shout out to everyone who attended and thank you all for a fantastic night. She said, I'm really enjoying the podcast. I don't agree with Lucy about Helen. I think her recent experiences have taught her lessons she won't forget in a hurry. I think it would have been an absolute disaster if Tom had told Tony about the pregnancy, especially given, yes, that's true, actually, especially given that it seemed Kirsty didn't want him involved and given the way he felt about the unconventional method Helen planned to have Henry. Oh, I'd completely forgotten that. Anyway, thanks for all the podcasts and I look forward to many more. Yes, you're completely right. I think I was in such a state of annoyance at Helen. I was just grabbing names out of the air. Yes, you're right. It would have been a disaster if Tom had told Tony. But I still think that she should respect when people... She just ignores... Her own anxiety drives her to... Helen, I mean. Her own anxiety just drives her... My friend who works in mental health says there is no one more selfish than an anxious person. And it's not... it's not kind of egocentric selfishness. It's like a victim-y selfishness where everything is about you so worrying that you've got it wrong somehow, that you've that you've somehow made things worse, or you haven't emerged as a perfect person, or you whatever, that they just go on and on and on, around and around and around and around and around the same thing. So even when Kirsty's saying, I do not want to talk about this, she just won't stop. You know, don't tell anyone about this, Helen. And then Helen's thinking, oh, well, I'll just tell so-and-so because I need to make it right for myself. And that will be all right, you know. I think we all know people like that.
Again, with my looking at this from 30,000 feet up, surely, considering that she's dominated the show for what, 5 years, that, you know, a great actor that she undoubtedly is, that she needs to, for the interests of the wider drama, to take a significant step back in the next year. So I don't really know what that means in terms of her and kind of Kirsty or Tom, but we just got to hear much less of her to let all the other characters breathe. And to be honest with you, that for me can't happen soon enough. And I want to hear less about her driving any kind of storylines, because we have, what, 30, 40 other characters? And I'm not really that interested in her motivations or her getting in the way of kind of anything, really. You know, let's have less Helen Archer for the next 18 months in a meaningful way. Don't let her drive any storylines. Let her be a sounding board for Kirsty or for Tom. And I think in that regard, her position is a very interesting one, because obviously, you know, she's Kirsty's best friend and she's Tom's sister. But we can't have her meaningfully driving anything.
Because, dominating like she did.
Yeah. Because, you know, come on. But I just going back a step, and this has kind of just come to mind, talking about little kind of plot teasers and amuse-bouches, sure, maybe what we're building up to is the Alan and Rob show. And it's, you know, the fact that Alan has been literally brought out of mothballs and actually had something meaningful to do as Alan as a character.
Yeah.
And he is the only person who Rob actually turns to and has some semblance of emotional honesty, some semblance. And we did comment just before Christmas when Alan said to him, you know, you've got to, in effect, forgive Helen and you've got to shape up for Jack. Right. And actually then in the next week, he turns around to Helen and says, I'm not going to contest a divorce, etc. That whatever happens next with Rob, Alan is going to be pretty central.
Yeah. If Rob hasn't already just gone.
Well, even if he has just gone, he's going to turn up at some point, bigly, as Trump would say, isn't he? There is no way.
Not just him. Thousands of him. Millions and thousands of him. Many, many more of him than anyone else has ever seen. Yes, that is the end of the emails.
Oh, all right. Oh, goodness. Right. You know what I'm going to do, Lucy?
What?
I'm going to toddle off to the kitchen and put kettle on. And I'll leave the listeners listening to me talk about Friday 15, which was rather enjoyable this week. I really enjoyed it because I spoke to some bloke about 1648 and how historians fetishise about that year, in that it's kind of the year that nation states are kind of founded throughout Europe. And I went, nah, is it really? But anyway, I'll leave you, good listener, to listen to that podcast, if you can say it can be fussed. And I'll sip me coffee. What are you going to do?
I will check if my boiler is still working, I think.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
See you in 5, everybody. In an uncertain world, there is always music which can be listened to in good company. Welcome to Friday 15, the show where we speak to friends and interesting people to the backdrop of great tunes and allocate 15 minutes to both.
I mean, I was 8 years old, interesting, the same age as the Dragon King's daughter when she comes out of the sea. But what was happening to me when I was 8 years old was that I was at the hands of a paedophile in a classroom for a year. And
awesome, yeah. For me, and I think the reason that I somehow managed to win in the end is that, for me, it's about an economy of the three things that bring a song together.
Catch up with me speaking to friends and interesting people every Friday afternoon on Friday 15, which you can get, of course, from a podcatcher of your choice.
G'day everyone, it's Millie Bell here. The reason I'm introducing myself is that Yokel Bear and I have been having a chat. We got on really well after we did the interview over the Christmas period, and we thought it would be nice for him to be a little bit more involved. So we are going to alternate with the run-ups. Those of you on Facebook will already know that, but that's a bit exciting. And of course, we do have slightly different styles, so I think that'll be fun for everybody. It also means that if one of us goes on holiday, well, the other one can easily cover. So, exciting times. On our forum, which is dumptydum.com/forums, there is a discussion started by Samantha Dean about Rob's journey to Damascus. Dusty Substances started one about bus darts in a tabard. David Faulkner was asking where the podcast is. Yep, it's Christmas, the holiday period. You have to bear with us, guys, but I think we're nearly back on track. And, so we would like to ramp up the interest in the forums if we can, because it's a different way of getting involved. And also to remind you that you can pin where you are on Traktor, so we know where you are and we can try for some meetups. So on our page, on the Facebook page, oh gosh, we've talked about so many things. And of course, again, just showing the diversity, Yokel Bear and I have completely different interests in the questions we ask. So you'll probably find it's more active than ever as we're now both posing questions. I was really interested with Susan, who was talking about, who cut Jim off when he was talking about birds and said, start talking about makeup, because of course everybody's interested in makeup. Zero and Joan said, a woman here totally disinterested in makeup with lifelong interest in birds. If you're off for a walk at the country park, who cares about lippy unless you're seeking the lesser spotted Patrick, that is. I wasn't being entirely serious when I posed the question, because whilst I am interested in makeup, I think everyone's entitled to be interested in birds if they'd like to. I just thought it was really funny and very Susan. We had a discussion about prior to what's happened this week, asking Rob to show us how he's going to get out of that one, and I will leave you to read that on Facebook, because of course things have changed since then. We also had a discussion about Lizzie stepping up. Catherine Newnham said, I'm glad to see her pitching the right message to Jill in the right tone. Carol has tried, Ruth has tried, but perhaps Lizzie can be the one who finally triggers Jill into getting over the whole Grace Fairbrother thing, and hopefully soon, as Jill's grudge is rather tedious. And I agree with you, Catherine. I think that Lizzie has some weight behind her in that she's also been affected by the Fairbrothers. So if anybody has authority to say, come on, let's forgive and forget, it's probably her. We had an announcement about Yokel Bear. Oh, by the way, when we pose up questions, we will put our initials up so you know who's asking the question. Don't suppose it really matters, but it is nice to know who's asking. We had a discussion about Lily. Is she a strong, independent young woman, or is she an annoying, spoilt brat? Well, to be honest with you, we're mixed on that, but most people seem to think she is a bit of a brat. Janice Marie Winch said, I loved her strong, interesting, spoilt and typical teenager. Well, not really typical as she has the big house, etc., but her attitude was typical. Loved the way Ian dealt with her. And also, by the way, good luck to Yokel Bear. Sarah Woods Rockle said, I'm not easily irritated by characters. I've always had a high tolerance of the most annoying, but I'm finding Lily and Freddie just a bit too spoiled and brattish to bear. Lots more in that vein. I want to finish with something that was put up by Stuart Arundel on the Obsessed at the Pool, because it really made me laugh. It was after the discussion about the Bert's poetry, and this is what he posted. And he posted it, he said, because it reminds him of Bert's poetry. And I have to say, now that I've read it, I agree. I'll just do a little bit of it. Oh, freddled grunt ugly, thy micturations are to me as pleurdled gabbled blotchets on a lurgid bee that mordiously have blurted out its arted jertles into a rancid, festering, confectious organ squealer, drowned out by moaning and screaming. That's, of course, Vogan poetry, and you can find that if you do a search. It's great fun, and it does sound exactly like Bert. Anyway, I'll see you in a fortnight. From me, hooroo!
Thank you, Millie Bell. I am looking forward to Yokel Bear alternating, doing kind of social media roundups. How about you, Lucy?
Yes, I think it is very nice when you can share things with people.
Do you now?
Yes.
Great. Also, you know what I love about the roundups? Because there was poetry mentioned and all sorts. You know, it's a kind of fascinating. Millie Bell, you do an awesome job. Well done, you.
Yes. Yeah. She really does. And she's frequently an unsung hero because she just gets on with it quietly, and she's too far away for us ever to meet up. We could do a surprise meeting, Millie Bell, but it really, really would be a surprise if we flew that far to suddenly pop up on your doorstep. It would be horrifying, quite frankly, for you probably. But we do really appreciate you, so thank you.
And I can't remember who exactly said it last week, because I don't have, I'm not looking at the notes of last week's show. But there was a listener that said, oh, Millie Bell, you know, I'd like to hear you talk about your feelings on exactly what's happening in the Archers. So, Millie Bell, I'm extending an invitation to you. In the next couple of months, we're going to grab you on the show. We'll have a proper chat.
Yes.
Right. Now, Luce. Mm-hmm. Hashtag the Archers tweets of the last 7 days. Thank you very much, please.
Most of them, no one will be surprised to hear, focus on the firing. Claire, at the end, I just actually listened to it again because I liked it. When Justin binned him, no, when Stefan said, I want you to pay double now. You have made me wait, and now I am angry and you lied to me, and now you have to pay me double the money. And he went, and then Lillian came in. And he said, did you hear that? And she went, no, me, and left. Mm. And then Rob sort of did this funny little noise, anxious little noise. And Claire said, was that the sound of Rob doing a little wee in his pants? I think it may well have been, Claire. Leonard Odissian said, Minnesota went Hillary Clinton, so whoever said they'd have Rob back probably couldn't give a fuck anymore. Do you know what? I don't think they really did say they wanted Rob back. He also, Leonard Odissian, and I know I'm skipping ahead again, there is a horsey episode in the week that we're in now. Leonard Odissian described that as excellent coconutting, which very much made me laugh. There was a lot of whoa! Come here, come on, boy. You know, and it just reminds me of me and my friends when we used to pretend, when we were sort of 6 and 7, we used to pretend to be riding round the playground on horses, and we'd mount and dismount, and in our minds we were so convinced that that's what we were really doing, we didn't think of how hilarious that looked to anyone that didn't know what we were doing. Mm. That we were waving our legs in the air, mounting and dismounting off imaginary horses. So yes, that's what I imagine Lillian and everyone else doing, trotting around with coconuts, like in Life of Brian. Not Life of Brian, the other one. Goldie Levels, mm-hmm, said, Lily is so like her mum. The new actor has got the voice spot on. Lizzie was my most disliked character until Helen grew up.
But yes, she really does.
Yeah, she's really got, she absolutely sounds like Alison Pettit's child. She really does. It's that really slightly little girly, really over pronounced sort of thing, and quite kind of, yeah, just really little, yeah, little girl voice.
Mm.
Yes. Good spot there. Iolanthe Rosa at the bloody dreadful party episode said, is it my imagination or was that episode a full hour? It certainly felt like it. I'm with you on that. Piotr Cieplak, who I think is a friend of Stefan, mm-hmm, said, I have visions of Kirsty and June going out on her own into a field to carve in peace and solitude. Yeah. She's going to have the entire Archer's clan clustered round the bed, waiting for her to pop it out so they can run away with it. And Archer's Goddess is Tweet of the Week. Archer's Goddess had a conversation between Rob and Alan. Hi, Rob. Hi, Alan. Pause. Rob, did you leave a poo on my doorstep? Yes, Alan. Goodbye. And that is the end of the tweets.
You've got me thinking, you know, about how as children we ape and we imagine, our imagination in terms of play is just the things, yeah, that we see around us and our kind of hopes and dreams of the future.
Yeah.
And in you saying at the age of 6, you know, you were riding imaginary horses. You know, I was trying to be a superhero. I was convinced that when I grew up, I was going to be a superhero. Aww. There's this lovely, lovely video which my mum and dad shared on WhatsApp. A bunch of little Jamaican boys. And they're no more than like 6 or 7. And I'm not going to do the accent, but it's a case of, so what do you want to be when you grow up? One boy says, bus driver. Right, and okay, that's good. It's obviously like their school teacher. What do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a policeman. It's like, okay, that's fantastic, you're going to be a policeman. And what do you want to be when you grow up? The boy just looks at me and says, Batman. The teacher, what? And he says, because I'll be a multi-billionaire and I'll get the best women, I want to be Batman. And whoever's holding the camera is just shaking with love. This kid is not joking. He did not. There was no wry smile. He says, Batman.
He's thinking, I can't understand why everyone else say Batman. What's wrong with him? You're going to be a bus driver and you can be Batman.
Yeah, he's the funniest thing. The camera's shaking. This person's laughing. He says, what's going on? Batman. I remember Mr. Higgs was my junior school teacher. We were like 9. I don't even think I was 10. I loved Mr. Higgs. And he did a similar thing going around the class. And at that point, he asked me, I wanted to be an astronaut, so whatever. But Dennis Sullivan said he wanted to be a binman. And everybody laughed and really hard. And Dennis Sullivan, he was, in inverted commas, the most challenged educationally in the class.
Okay.
And everybody laughed. And I'll never forget to this day his answer. He has very calmly said, considering the work that they do, they get paid very well. And that's what I want to be, because I want a good week's pay for the work that I do. And I don't have to go to college to do that. And I remember I just stopped laughing. And at the age of 9, I thought, he's onto something here.
Yeah.
These boys much smarter than we're all giving him credit. Yeah. You know? And but yeah, Bin Man or Batman, it's one or the other.
Right. I know a boy who, when he was 9, his every photo his mother took, every family photo they have. He jumped in the air, so it looked like when she took the photo, he was flying. So everything, every school photo, he jumped in the air just at the minute, right, hold it, no! And then he'd leap. So because he was determined to get one photo out of that year where he looked like he was hovering. So she said all of the photos of that year are rubbish because there's a blur of him leaping in the air. It's a real thing for boys, isn't it? It's wanting to be a superhero. I think it's being able to right small injustices, because when you're a child, you just feel that there is a lot of injustice and most of it is aimed at you. And it's an opportunity to fix. You think, when I'm bigger, I'll sort this out. This won't happen anymore. And it's sort of an extension of that, I think.
Yeah. You know, it is a kind of famous five type of, you know, putting the world to rights. You kind of understand that there are people who are, you know, less fortunate than you, etc. Me growing up in the 70s, we're just about on the tail end of the Second World War being something which you kind of connected to. There was all those comics you could read about some British soldier who was surrounded by a whole group of Germans and, you know, he machine gun his way out of there and stuff. We'd also play soldiers, but the other side weren't just French or whatever, they were Nazis and they were bad, you know, and we were good and they were bad. And also growing up then, there was the whole kind of cowboys and Indians thing, you know, you still play cowboys and Indians. And I always kind of subscribe my political awakening to realizing that the Indians weren't the bad guys, that it was their land. Why is it that we are taking their land when they were there first, and we're coming across here in our wagons? And that was really profound for me, because you always wanted to be a cowboy, not an Indian. And then I remember saying in the playground, but wait, whoa. Let's think about these
guys, just stop for a second.
Seriously. And I went, But they're not the bad guys. It's their land. They're defending their land. Why are they the bad guys? You know, and that's profound for me.
Threw a football boot at your head and carried on playing, I would imagine.
You know what? Well, here's another thing I've freely admit. No one's thrown a football boot at my head. I was a bully when I was that age and stuff.
Really?
Yeah. It's something which I have kind of fessed up to somebody in the last year. But I always justified it by doing what was right. There was always some reason behind it. But I was, when I was about 8, 9, 10, you know, poor Stephen Tarmey, I put that boy through hell. You know, I'm not proud of it at all, but I was a bit of a bully. So no one was throwing anything at my head. I would have dealt with them at that age. But a bit stroppy I was.
Ooh, this is a whole new side.
Yeah, well, I don't want to massively derail our whole podcast here, but is it an accident that I was bullshy, stroppy, told people what to do, and I was in a school where I was a visible minority of like 2%?
Yeah.
So I was obviously overcompensating.
Also, but were you also physically small then?
No.
Oh, okay.
I think it's funny because in my head, because you know, obviously how you construct yourself as an adult is massively in large part your childhood. And I was never a small kid. I was never a massive kid. So I don't see myself as, you know, what, I'm 5'7". I don't see myself as small. But as an adult, I'm average to small. I don't. Because as a kid, I never was. And this was kind of borne out last year when we did a very small little meetup of people I went to senior school with. And they're all like 3-4 inches taller than me. And they said, what happened to you? You've shrunk. And I went, exactly, because I was never...
I bet Stephen Tarmey's 8'6" now. I'll come and find you and batter you to death.
Oh, God, poor Stephen Tarmey. That weren't good, Lisa. I subjected the poor boy to at least 12 months' worth of terror. And it weren't really his fault. It was his dad's fault, who kind of shat on me and my mum. But I took it out on him. But when all I can say is when you're 8 and 9, you don't kind of understand that. It's a case of your dad did that, so I'm just going to take it out on you. But the poor boy. Stephen, I apologise profusely. But yeah, I think, you know, me being a little bit of a bullshy one at that age I was overcompensating for the fact that there's nobody else that kind of looked like me in that whole school. And don't get me wrong, there was never, well, I can't say there was never, I remember being called Nignog quite a few times and stuff. But I'm not going to sit here and say that I had a terrible childhood. I love going to Green Home School, and I didn't feel from day after day that I was different. I didn't. But, you know, in hindsight, I think in part my behaviour around about that age must have been to do with that. Must have been.
Mm. Wow.
Mm. Anyway. Yeah.
In other news, according to Tractor, we've got Mary Trussell in Toronto and Devon and Cornwall.
Oh,
how
have
has
we?
This happened?
Right. Well, let's deal with that, shall we? Tractor, folks, it's on dumdydum.com. It is the...
If you never fancied living in another country, now's your chance. Just stick your pin in wherever you feel like. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, folks. Tractor... is a big map on our website, dumdydum.com. You can go there and you can pin yourself to it. And just today, I've been asked by a dumdydum who shall remain anonymous, who was that person up in blah, 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 because I'd like to invite them along to something. And you know what? I couldn't quite remember, but I went on to Tractor and I found the geographic location, found that dumdydum member and emailed them. So Tractor, folks, it's an ideal way for you to meet up with fellow Archers addicts and dumdydum fans. Now, I've been saying for weeks now, I'm going to start mentioning our little clusters. And it's one thing to say we have a cluster in London. That goes without saying, or in Birmingham or Manchester. But the fact that we have two Dumdy Dummers in Singapore, Lucy, you know,
We have three. We have my friend Ben as well.
Well, he's not on there, though, is he? He's not on Tractor.
No, but I'm just saying he's there. Well, hello, Ben.
Well, Singapore is hardly the biggest place in the world. There's no reason why the hell they don't organise a Dumdy Dum meetup. So, why don't you name and shame the first Dumdy Dummer in Singapore?
Jennifer Dodgson Burgess.
And Tim Jaycock. Me, and then Ben. Lucy's mate Ben. So what you need to do, pin yourself to that bloody map. Stop fanning around. Get it sorted. Meet up and then tweet a picture or Facebook a picture.
Yes.
Because the Newcastle posse have shown us how it should be done. Right? Don't need to go through Dumdy Dum HQ, but just get it done. Right, it's all about meeting people, Dumdy Dum. It's a social thing. We're a community. Sort it in Singapore, please. Now, in Devon and Cornwall, there are 10 Dumdy Dums. 10 that are on Tractor. Lucy, can I just say that again? 10! Can you believe it? Go on, then.
Tess Blight is one.
Philippa Davey.
Chris Penberthy.
Millie Hart.
Steve Parrott.
Mary Trussell.
Carol Newcomb.
Chris Paul.
Dave Knowles.
And Candida Beeching. And you're all over the Twitters, Candida. So I'm not saying that you should organise it, but why don't you organise it? All right, because there's a proper cluster around Plymouth. But you're not a million miles away. I saw on the map, you could easily just jump in your car and be in Plymouth in about, I reckon, 40 minutes tops. So,
you're so bossy.
Well,
really?
No, well, maybe I am, right?
You are.
But that's the whole point of Tractor. Now, right, so we've done Singapore, we've done Devon and Cornwall, Toronto.
According to you, Mary Trussell is also in Toronto, so let's take her out because I don't think she is.
Well, whatever, right? Now, in Toronto, we've got Dumdy Dummers to spare. Thank you for correcting that, Lucy V.
Well,
Freeman.
We've got four. Let's
well,
be
no, 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 no. Okay. Cynthia Jen, we got her. Victoria Litterer. Mary Trussell, she is there. She's obviously put herself there down there twice.
But which one is she then? Devon and Cornwall or
yeah, but
does she have two homes?
Yeah, but I put myself in a couple of places as well. I'm in Birmingham, I'm in London, I'm in San Francisco, and I'm not the only person that's done that. Because you see, Lucy, some people legitimately put themselves in two places, like Leslie G, who's in Orkney, and she's in Wiltshire.
Right.
Because, you know, because some people have two homes, good luck to them. Some people live and work in two locations. So it's quite legitimate. And then some people spend some part of the year somewhere else, a bit like me. So I'm
some
in.
Some people press the wrong button on Tractor, Mary Trussell.
Well, yeah, that could well be.
I still can't do it, Mary. So you're one ahead. In fact, you're two ahead of me.
That could well be what's happened. But the fact that she's kind of clustered around a big city and not in the middle of the ocean, as I tell you, a couple of people have done that, and you know they have bugged it up. Oh my goodness, guess what?
What?
Mary Trussell is in the Atlantic Ocean as well.
Oh, Mary.
I think
we sent a boat. Do you need help?
I think there's been some kind
mayday,
of...
Mayday, mayday.
User malfunction.
Bobbing.
All right. So maybe you don't actually live in or spend a lot of your time in Toronto. But that's immaterial. Right, because we've still got Simply Jenya, Mary Nutt Contrary, who's had a baby, Victoria Litterer, and Soren Jordan, who...
Hang on. Could we just say congratulations for the having the baby thing?
No, we have already... We did that weeks ago.
Did we?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we should say it again. Well done! It's very hard, isn't it? Well done. Yes, carry on. Carry on with the baby.
And actually... Yes. Mary, I think you should actually call the Rinnerer next week and give us a little bit of progress about how your new family are getting on, because you've had your first
and obviously
Christmas.
And we'll have introduced it to the Archers.
Absolutely. So, if you don't call in next week, we'll be revoking your tractor membership. so get it done.
You are playing hardball today.
I am. Now, folks, that is that. Now, I'm slightly going off script here, but Lucy and I have had a little bit of a talk and a think, and we still haven't made
hang on,
any...
Hang on, where are we going? Where are we going with this?
About the membership thingy.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And we
just
might...
It's all right.
We might have actually come up with a solution whereby shows aren't necessarily behind a paywall, but you, as the listener, would have... various incentives to be to maybe get more involved in one specific
and enter
show.
The Dumpty Dump Hall of Fame.
Exactly. So bear with us on that, but hopefully by next week's show we'll have a plan to unveil to you all. Now, that is fundamentally us trying to shake cash out of you, and there's a couple of ways which generally that we do that. Aren't there, Lucy?
There are.
Now, first off, we say, go on to dumdydum.com and hit that donate button. And you can make a one-off payment, or you can go on to patreon.com, whereby you can donate $2 per show. Any other Archers-related news at the moment, Lucy?
There is. Sorry, I just accidentally shut my script down and just managed to open it again. Yes, there is an Academic Archers Conference going on at the University of Lincoln from the 17th to the 19th of February 2017. And you can do a search on the Twitters for hashtag Academic Archers and you will find it and you can go to it and it will be good.
Yeah, it will. Freya, you know, I tell you who I'm falling in love with. That Freya, she's awesome. She drinks whiskey like me. Yeah. And I think her and I and Robert Wilson...
Me. I said me as well. I'm coming.
What are you joining in? Why?
Well, yeah, but hang on. How can you do it when we're in meeting up in London?
Well, they're talking about May.
Yeah.
I've got to come back to the UK at some point.
Oh, have you? Oh, okay. I didn't realize it was going to be that soon.
No. Well, I don't mind coming, you know, just the very fact that I'm over here doesn't mean I'm never going to ever go back to the UK. And no. I've got to come back once, twice a year, check up on my flat, blah, 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 so, go see my mum and dad and my brother. So if somebody was to say to me, mid-May, right, I'll say, well, I need to be in the UK twice this year. I will come back round about that time, go see my mum and dad, go see friends, go and have a drink with Freya.
Oh, okay.
Who's just emailed me. Her ears are obviously burning. She's done us a banner. She's awesome. Anyway, so Academic Archers, that's all good, smashing and super. Remember, folks, to get in contact with us, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on our site, or you can call us on 02030313105 to leave us a message via a telephone device. On social media, specifically Twitter, we are at DumDum. Me, I'm at Royfield. Harriet, the woman of 1,000 Archers voices, you can find her at Sandbridges. And then you, Lucy, how do people find you?
And I am at Lucy V. Freeman.
On Facebook, we have more like a look as we shake a stick at. And I presume that now you're going to be corralled and kind of cattle prodded by a yokel bear as well as Millie Bell. I presume that's what's going to happen.
Nobody wants to be cattle prodded by yokel bear. Sounds appalling. Nobody wants to be cattle prodded by anybody.
Right, that's me. I've run out of puff.
Okay.
How much puff have you still got in you?
None. I need to go and have a cup of tea now.
All right, see you later.
Bye.
Hello, Barrett Green here. Obviously, I cannot under any circumstances condone blackmail.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.